Thank you for listening to this Podcast One Sportsnet production, available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
He started in a small town in Texas. Worked his ass off to become one of the most famous wrestlers of all time.
We're going to take care of business tonight, and that's the bottom line.
And now, he's dominating the world of on-demand audio.
And he's doing it for the working man.
This is a damn good outlet for me to spew the bullshit off my brain.
Yeah!
This is the Steve Austin Show. Unleashed.
All right, everybody, welcome to Steve Austin Show. I am coming to you from the mean streets of Los Angeles, California today. I am sitting in my office at 316 Gimmick Street here in Marina Del Rey. Looking at the Pearl Beer neon clock on this desk, it says 10 minutes until 4 p.m. As the second hand continues to rotate in a clockwise fashion, no pun intended, like a rotisserie chicken. Hey man, I'm glad you guys tuned in to the show today because I've got a badass guest for you today. The one and only Ian Hodgkinson, Vampiro from Lucha Underground, is my guest on the podcast today. Ian came by the house at 316 Gimmick Street to talk about the business of pro wrestling, and we're going to get into some specifics. We're going to talk about selling. We're going to talk about fire, and the conversation is going to ratchet up to about 11 or 12 in intensity because I'm trying to expound a little bit of knowledge upon some of the finer points of the business which have been seemingly forgotten or just completely lost or not given a shit about. So we're going to talk all about that stuff. Grab your seatbelt and strap in. We're going to talk some lucha. We're going to talk podcasting, little Stevie Ray Vaughan, some Krav Maga, and all kinds of bullshit. I had a damn good time talking to Ian Hodgkinson the other night. We cracked about two Broken Skull IPAs, got a chance to drink a beer with a man that I talked to about a year or two ago while he was down in Thunder Bay, and I was sitting here, and we were Skyping, had a damn good conversation with him. I've never met Vampiro, so it was good to meet the man, shake his hand, look him in the face, look him in the eyes while I was talking to him, and we had a damn good visit. Very polite cat, very well spoken. I look forward to talking to Ian next time he comes to the L.A. area. Again, for you Lucha Underground folks, Ultima Lucha still continues to go on all the way to the 20th with an epic finale, Lucha Underground on the El Rey Network. Hey, before I get to my conversation with Vampiro, check this out. The other day, I rode out to Agua Dulce, California to ride my Kawasaki mule at the Broken Skull Challenge compound. If you guys been tuning into my Twitter account, you've heard that CMT greenlit the toughest show on television once again for season 4. So any of you people out there that listen to my voice, if you think you're bad enough, you think you're tough enough, if you think you got what it takes to wade through 7 other human beings and be the final person left to take on my skull buster at sunrise the next day, then go to BrokenSkullChallenge.com and sign your ass up. I look forward to seeing you down at the ranch. Anyway, I digress, back to my story. I rode out to the Broken Skull Challenge just to ride my Kawasaki Mule Pro FXT around a little bit. Been a while since I had been out there. As you know, I'm still recovering from this rotator cuff surgery. My right shoulder is coming along just fine. It's doing real good. And I was just kind of tooling around out there, cruising around, enjoying getting a breeze in my damn scalp and ride around and look at all the sights out there and go up and down some of that rocky terrain, that four-wheel drive. And I put my Kawasaki mule up in my storage bin, locked it up, and I got on the highway. It's about a 50-mile drive from Agua Dulce to Marina Del Rey, and I was hauling ass about 70, 80 miles an hour, just like everybody else. And I was going in and out of lanes, and I was using my turn signal every time I did this, and I noticed that not a lot of other people were using the damn turn signals. What the fuck is wrong with people? You got to use your indicators, your blinkers, your turn signals. Another story. Just this morning, got up, went out to Thousand Oaks, California, about a 40-mile drive from Marina Del Rey to pick up my mother-in-law, to bring her back to the house, to spend the night with us. Same goddamn thing. Nobody's using their turn signals, their blinkers, or their indicators. I said, what the fuck is wrong with everybody? They act goddamn lazy? Or, just like the finer points I'm going to explain to N. Hodgkins and Van Pier on the podcast about selling and fire, the same thing applies to a damn turn signal. I said, you know what? What do I need to do to help people understand what the fuck a turn signal is? So I got on my computer, I opened it up, and in the little window there, I just typed in turn signal. And it took me to a WikiHow to do anything page, like Wikipedia. This is WikiHow. I'm reading this shit directly off the damn screen from my open. How to use your turn signal. Check this out. Part of safe driving is letting other drivers around you know what you intend to do. Using your turn signals is not difficult, and it's generally required by law whenever you make a turn or change lanes. Hello! By providing a signal, you communicate to others on the road. You let a motherfucker know what you're going to do. This keeps you and other drivers safe, and it prevents accidents. Method 1. Using turn signals to make a fucking turn. 1. Locate the lever on the left side of the steering column. The turn signal is a long lever, usually black or gray in color. When moved up or down, this fucking lever will cause the light on either the left or right side of your car to flash. 2. Use the turn signal to indicate a turn to the left. To signal a left turn, wait until you're approximately 30 yards from the corner around which you intend to turn. Ensure you're in the left turn lane, then push the turn signal lever down gently with your left hand. When the turn signal locks in place, you'll be able to see a flashing arrow directed to the left on your instrument cluster. You'll also hear a tick-tock sound which clicks in time with the flashing of the light. This indicates that the signal is operating properly. Return your hand to the steering wheel and continue driving. Now, indicate a right turn with the turn signal. To signal a right turn, wait until you're within about 30 yards of the corner you wish to round. Ensure you're in the right turn lane, then move the lever up with your left hand. The series of events which follow are similar to those which occur when making a signal to turn towards the left. Once you have moved the lever up, an arrow light will begin blinking on the dashboard instrument cluster. You will also hear a metronome-like sound at regular intervals, which clinks in time with the flashing light on your instrument cluster. Hello. Okay. 4. Ensure your turn signal turns off after your turn has been completed. Now, normally, the turn signal will automatically turn off after you've made the turn. Now, some turns, which are at angles at less than 90 degrees, however, might not trigger the automatic suspension of the turn signal after you've made the turn. Failing to turn your turn signal off after you've completed the turn can be illegal and cause confusion for other drivers. 5. Signal your turn even if you're in a turning lane. Some traffic lanes are reserved for left or right turns only. While it might seem unnecessary to indicate you're turning when it should be obvious based on the lane you're in, use the turn signal anyway, motherfucker. Drivers who are not familiar with the area or who cannot see the signs due to multiple vehicles ahead of them in the lane will appreciate the indication as to where you're headed and could clue them into the fact your lane is for turning in a given direction. Plus, the goddamn law requires that you make a turn with your turn signal. Shit. 6. Don't turn your turn signal on too soon. Only activate your turn signal when there are no intervening streets or alleys between you and the place you wish to turn. If you turn your signal on too soon, someone might think you're turning into a parking lot or down a street, which you actually are not. This confusion could lead to an accident or to you being cut off. Now, here's method 2. Dig this. Using turn signals to merge into or out of traffic. 1. God damn, this is important. Use your turn signal when pulling out from the curb. Before leaving a parking spot on the side of the street, it is important to indicate you're about to merge into traffic. After getting in your car, activate your turn signal in the direction you wish to merge. For instance, if you're parked on the right side of the street and you wish to merge into the lane parallel to your vehicle on the left side, activate your left-hand turn signal by pulling down on the signal lever. Check your side mirror to ensure there is space and the flow of traffic to pull out. Then turn your wheel hard to the left and accelerate gently. Return the signal lever to the neutral starting position by pushing up gently on it. Now dig this one. This is real fucking important. This is a merge onto a highway. Get on a highway with your turn signal. When merging onto the highway, accelerate quickly so you can attain the speed appropriate for highway driving. About halfway down the on-ramp, flick your left-hand turn signal on. This will demonstrate that you want to get over. But remember, you do not have the right of way when merging. Be careful when merging into high-speed traffic. Let me read this sentence again, because every one of these motherfuckers out here in Los Angeles thinks just because they're in the merge lane, they think they got the right of way. And they start cussing at you and flipping you off and honking at you and going crazy when you don't give them the right of way. Once again, goddammit, here it is. When merging onto the highway, accelerate quickly so that you attain the speed appropriate for highway driving. About halfway down the on-ramp, flick your left-hand turn signal on. This will demonstrate you want to get over. But remember, motherfuckers, you don't have the right of way when merging. Be careful when merging into high-speed traffic. Here's a little psychology for you. This isn't on the page, but the people that are already on the highway, those people have the right of way because they're already on the highway. Since you're trying to get on the highway, you must merge or yield to them. Speed up like a motherfucker, slow down a con hair, whatever it takes to feather in. Just remember, you do not have the right of way when you merge in. They do. Fuck. Exit the highway with your turn signal. This is a big one, folks. If you need to get off the highway, position yourself in the far right lane on the highway. If your exit ramp is on the left, position yourself in the far left lane of the highway. Turn the appropriate turn signal on when you're about 100 yards from the off-ramp, give or take. Do not slow down as you approach the off-ramp. Only modify your speed and adjust your turn signal once you're on the off-ramp. God damn it. Here's one. Indicate when you wish to change lanes with your turn signal. Hallelujah. This is what I'm fucking talking about. On the highway, if, for instance, you're in the right-hand lane and you want to change the left lane, you can do it easily and safely by employing your turn signal. First, put your turn signal on in the direction you wish to go. To move into the right lane, push your turn signal up to let others know you wish to move to the right. To move into the left lane, push your turn signal lever down to indicate you wish to move into the left lane. Activate the turn signal at least 5 seconds before you wish to change lanes. That's going to give or take a little bit. Don't switch the signal on for just one or two flickers. Place it in a locked position just as you would when making a turn. That's the middle of the road. Just make sure you give a signal. If it's all clear, turn your wheel slightly toward the lane you wish to merge into. Once you're completely within the boundaries of the lane, move your left hand to your turn signal lever and switch it off. Do not cross multiple lanes of traffic with a single activation of your turn signal. If you know you need to cross many lanes, give yourself the adequate time and space to do so. Plan your lane merges ahead of time. So, when you turn your signal on, you can't cut across three fucking lanes. Go to one lane, check your rearview mirror, employ your signal again. Get to the next lane, check, turn your signal on, look in your rearview mirror, and so forth and so on. It's pretty damn easy, folks. It ain't hard to do. I was doing some history research on the turn signal. I believe the turn signal was invented, give or take, around 1920, and then they became a standard goddamn features on an automobile. Back in the day, when was the first car invented? 1903, 1908, whatever it was, Model T. They didn't have no blinkers back then. They barely had some headlights. But that little stalk on the left-hand side of your steering column, up to the right, down to the left. I gave you the particulars on WikiHow. You know what the fuck you're doing. Don't be a prick. I got a goddamn Range Rover that I lease. I got a 95 Ford Bronco. I got a 2003 Ford Focus. It don't matter what car I'm driving. I don't consider myself too good, too cool, too much of a hotshot, too arrogant to use my goddamn turn signals. Cause I let a brother and a sister know what direction I'm going. You hear me? I don't think that's asking too much. If you use your turn signals, and we all use our turn signals, and I'm using my turn signals, hey, there'll be one less wreck on the goddamn highway or one less wreck in the city in which you live. It ain't that goddamn hard. All right, before we move on to the show here with Vampiro, I need to give some big ups to a longtime sponsor of the Steve Austin Show, and that's Diamond Dallas Page and the DDP Yoga. Dallas and his crew are the ones who put together the Resurrection Jake the Snake documentary, and this is one badass documentary, but you ain't got to take my word for it. Just look how well it's doing on Netflix. Right now, the Resurrection of Jake the Snake is the 6th highest rated documentary of all time on Netflix. People are loving this documentary, and not just wrestling fans, so check it out on Netflix. Be sure to give it a rating after you watch it. You can also get the documentary on Blu-ray and DVD now, and the collector's edition comes with 20 bonus features, including a commentary track narrated by Dallas Jake and director Steve Yu. So just go to ddpyoga.com/Austin to get the Resurrection of Jake the Snake Collector's Edition DVD or Blu-ray, along with your own copy of the DDP Yoga program. And if you do it now, you'll save 20% off your order. DDP is giving you guys a once-in-a-lifetime deal right now. Yes, once again, a once-in-a-lifetime deal right now. You heard me right. You'll get 20% off anything you buy at ddpyoga.com/Austin. Don't miss your chance to try DDP's life-changing DDP Yoga program. This is more than just a workout. This is a way to live a healthier life. DDP gives you everything you need, and all you got to do is commit. So get the Resurrection of Jake the Snake documentary. Get yourself on the DDP Yoga program, and do all that for 20% off by going to ddpyoga.com/Austin. That's ddpyoga.com/Austin and get 20% off anything you buy for a limited time.
What up? Hey, this is Conan. Hear what some of my friends and respected colleagues have to say about my new podcast, Keeping It 100. Boom.
Hey, this is the Disco Inferno, Glenn Gilberti. I hope he brings you on sometime. I will absolutely bury him.
Montel Vontavious Porter, MVP, Keeping It 100 with Conan. It's the definitive cure for insomnia. You can call it audio ambient.
This is Violent J from Insane Clown Posse. What's all this hype about Keeping It 100? He stole his entire swag from us. We should have this damn show.
Hey, yo, say hello to the bad guy, Scott Hall.
Jericho, you must be really desperate for content to put this JoJo on your network. Conan couldn't be a star if he was thrown by a ninja.
Hello, everybody. This is Vince Russo. How long is Conan going to last, especially if his boss, Chris Jericho, decides to drug test him?
Tangana, this is Spanish announcer Hugo Savinovich. Conan with his own show? Peligro, peligro. It's dangerous.
Steve Austin, Unleashed.
Unleashed.
I'm recording sound. I'm sitting here with Vampiro in Hodgkinson, 316 Gimmick Street. I was about to hit the record button. I said, Ian, what do you want to talk about? He goes, I don't know. I said, I got nothing. And here's the thing. He was over there looking across the room, and he noticed one of my clocks. And it's a real chill kind of clock. I don't know the name of it. But it says on it, it is 7:05 with these gimmick letters. And I collect all these. Kristen, what's this clock from?
Design something or other?
Oh, my wife doesn't know. Never mind. She wasn't of any help today. Normally, my wife can solve all the problems of the world. Anyway, I'm sitting here in a room full of clocks with Vampiro. I said, brother, what do you want to talk about? I said, I got nothing. And I got something. I told him I got to start. Ian, welcome to the show. Welcome to my house. How are you?
I'm excited to see you in person, man. It's good to be here, brother.
I know we had a great conversation on the telephone, and then all of a sudden get a chance to shake hands out there.
Yeah.
And come inside and shoot the breeze.
Great beer, by the way. Thank you very much.
We only drank one beer. This is not a drunken podcast. This
it should
Steve.
Be, though.
It could be, and it should be, but you're driving. We've got to be responsible.
No, you got to be responsible.
You're the one driving, not me.
I'm okay. I'm Canadian.
Okay. You heard it here first on the Steve Austin Show. So I told Innocent I got to start. Okay, and here's my start. A couple of weeks ago, two dudes had a match. And I said, well, one guy carried the other guy in the match. The one guy was an 18-year vet. The guy that got carried had been in business about 5 or 6 years. All of a sudden, all the headlines were, Steve Austin said so-and-so carried so-and-so, like it was an insult. Dude, I've been carried a million times in my career in professional wrestling matches. Hell, I got carried by Bill Dundee. I got carried by Billy Travis, Gary Young, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart. I can say the name of a bunch of people. So it wasn't an insult. You have been carried in a match because you happen to be working with a veteran who had a lot of experience and you were a little bit on the green side in?
100%.
So was that an insult that I spouted off?
I think it's an insult for the younger guys missing the boat and understanding they should look to work with older guys so they get that experience.
But to the wrestling journalists or the people that try to...
Was it an insult? Right about, hell
yeah,
no.
Not an insult. It's just a plain facts.
Yeah.
You call a spade, dude carried the match.
Okay.
Okay, and that's all I said. So it was just grinding my gears, and you've been in the business damn near about the same time or longer than I have been. You're still actively engaged with Lucha Underground on El Rey Network. We're going to talk about the Ultimate Lucha, which is coming up on July 6th through July 20th. As you guys wrap up, was that season two?
Season three? We just wrapped season three.
Wrapped season two.
Look at you, the journalist. I'm just watching you.
No, dude, if I'm going to talk about y'all's shit, I got to talk about y'all's shit.
Yeah, look at you.
But so you know the fact that someone carries somebody to match, it is what it is. It ain't no insult.
No, it's not. You need a ring general. It's just the way it goes. Somebody's got to be the leader.
Yeah, so anyway, I just had to get that out there. That was my start.
Well, it's a great start. I mean, and I think that people think they're so smart about our business, and unfortunately, good and bad, or if it's right or wrong, I have no idea, man. You or I don't have a say in this. Things evolve, and people talk too much. The mystique and the romantic part of the whole industry is kind of slowly being exposed, right? Like that guy in Las Vegas who puts the mask on and gives everybody's gimmick away. What the fuck you doing that for? I know that that's not magic, but I want to see the show, man. Don't fucking ruin it for me. A lot of people think that, oh, he carried the match, or your comment like that. Well, let me tell you something, man. The average fan should know that there's about 10 or 12 other people who have their fingerprints on that match. It's not just those two dudes up there, so fucking chill out.
Yeah, but here's the thing. It's just like...
Sorry, I know your wife's here, man.
No, that's cool. We got the sliding doors closed.
I'm sorry.
Soundproof. No, dude, this is an Unleashed show. You're good. Thanks for the respect, though. Ian took his boots off. I said, no, man, you ain't going to take your boots off. He goes, no, brother, it's your house. It's the thing to do, so respect.
Thank you.
Let's talk about a classic... Let's talk about The Rock. Biggest movie star in the world right now, in my opinion.
Okay.
Okay. Now, in his movies... He's either, man, he's beating up a lot of cats, he's laying a smack down on people, or doing what he's got to do to, it's like in San Andreas, the earthquake movie.
Okay.
He's saving, the world of the city from all this death and destruction. Now, Ian, do you think that shit really happened? No, it didn't happen, but it's a movie, and we believe that Dwayne The Rock Johnson is saving all these people. Okay? So, now, you made a great point. The mystique and the, what was the other
romanticism.
Word? Romanticism. Yeah, of the business has been eroded away by kayfabe being broken. But, hey, yeah, kayfabe was broken, and then, Dr. D. David Schultz slapped John Stossel. I talk about this so many times, people rib me about it. 20, 30 years ago, all the different talk shows talked about, oh, wrestling really isn't real. I thought it was real when I first started watching it in, but nonetheless, when I watch the business today, when I watch Lucha Underground on El Rey Network, or if I still watch WWE, dude, I'm buying in. I'm just watching it for what it is. The fact that I did it and I know it gives me a critical eye. Okay. So I guess there's two sets of eyes in that I watch the product from. One, when two guys really go out there and nail it, and I'm able to just forget about everything and be a fan. On the other end of it, if I'm watching bad work and a bad storyline, because I am smart to the business, then I start to pick things apart.
Okay.
But left to it, the business left to its own devices, with me knowing what I know, if there's a quality match being done by two badass hands who I understand their character, their motivation, and the reason for which they're fighting, dude, I'm in as a fan.
Yep, 100%. I agree with you. Even though I'm ringside and I'm watching as an announcer and I'm seeing all this insane acrobatic stuff, I look at it different. If I have 5 or 10 minutes to myself, and you know how it is when you're busy, you don't want to be around what you're involved in. You want to breathe. But I still find myself this day, I watch Kawada matches or Misawa or Kobashi, that Stan Hansen, that mid-1990s, early 90s, mid-90s, All Japan stuff, because that's what does it for me. I'll watch a match I watch it over and over again with Takada and Muda for the big UWF New Japan Invasion angle. I was like, God damn, I'm a fan, because I know this is what I want to see. Watching this stuff today, I can't. Not a fan.
Of anything?
That comment's probably going to get me in a lot of trouble, but let me say it this way. I don't watch it as a fan anymore. Now I watch it as when we were rehearsing and we were going over this, and I sat at home for 3 weeks trying to think of how to help you tell the story, and I'm sitting there and I see that you listen to me, then I'm into it. If you're just going to go out there and you brush me off and you look at me and you just kind of do flipping and flying, it doesn't do it for me. It doesn't do it for me.
But to me, as long as you have some physicality, there's some logic in there. And I go back to...
If there's no logic, brother, if you get a beautiful Barbie doll girl, is that really going to turn your crank for the rest of your life? Or do you want somebody with some grit, some scar tissue, some experience?
Brains.
It's the same thing.
Yeah.
Right? Experience. Somebody who can kind of move you and compete with you and hold your curiosity and sometimes make you want to be a better person. Wrestling does that to you. You watch it. You go to wrestling because you want to be a wrestler. You want to get rid of your stress. You're a fan. You're freaked out. You like the energy. But if it's just put together like a video game, it's like, what are we doing here? Am I wrong to say that?
No, going back to the Stan Hansen Brody stuff, and you're talking about like 90s, and I go back to, it was like I was talking to Ricochet. Prince Puma was on here a while back, and I was talking to him. You know,
is that who that is? Ricochet? He's two guys? Are you kidding me?
See, come on,
fuck,
dude.
I've been doing this forever, and no one tells me anything.
Yeah, so
I'm still waiting for my first victory.
Yeah, and like, because we were
don't
talking.
Don't even tell me this isn't a shoot now.
Dude, it's a total shoot. It's a work shoot. It's a shoot on a work. So, like I told him, you know, the match that he had with Will Ospreay over in New Japan, I mean, it was cool. It was badass. And I told him I'd never seen anything like it. And I hadn't. I won't back off that statement. It was spectacular. The athleticism, timing, precision were just off the charts. But, you know, just like I told him, right to his face, dude, I like it. That mid-80s NWA, Four Horsemen, Ric Flair, Dusty Rhodes, Nikita Koloff, you know, coming on it, Rock and Roll Express, Midnight Express, leading into your All Japan stuff, because big fans of Gordy, Freebirds, Brody, Hanson, okay. Funks, you know, all that stuff you're talking about, because, dude, I mean, you're bringing a fight. You're bringing a fight, and I guess for me, because I guess I don't want to say I'm trapped in a 6'1", 270-pound body, but that's the body in which I perform my work, so I wasn't able to do the things that those guys could do. But to me, just in watching two guys slug it out with logic, if you're doing all the high-flying stuff and there's logic behind it, then I can dig it. Just like I could the heavy hitting stuff, it's sometimes when you start flying too much, maybe you defy too much logic.
Well, okay, I understand exactly what you're saying, and I think my answer is this. And in Lucha Underground, the people in production and the staff, the writers, the producers, or however you want to say it, are so in tune with making sure that there's validity to the violence. We're stressing, so, and that's the pride and joy of crafting a conversation with these young men and women who are doing these extraordinary physical feats. I, in a million years, for $100 million, would never, ever try a moonsault to the floor. Are you kidding me? But these kids do it with their eyes closed and they look at you and laugh. I mean, hey, things have evolved, and good, thanks to the people who influenced us, we did this, now they are doing that because of what we did. So sitting back and being able to contribute and say, look it, man, don't do this, that, and the other thing, and just, if somebody super kicks you to the mouth, fucking hell, sell that, get up and hit them back, okay, but sell your job, man. Those little details that we're injecting into Lucha Underground is definitely, if you watch the promos, the vignettes, the storyline, there is logic, but you really got to sit down and watch the whole show. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes total sense. I guess not to sit here and run us into a big circle or beat a dead horse. But to me, it's like, as they say, the business evolves. I was talking to a guy a few weeks ago. He said it just changed. Man, I think, and with respect to the younger generation that are in the ring in the WWE now or in Lucha Underground or anywhere, Ring of Honor, any organization, man, be as athletic or push it to the limit as much as you want. But just make sure you got to have some razzle-dazzle here and there, or if you got that body that can do all that kind of stuff, great. But just sell it. If you're on the receiving end of it, just sell it. Take that Will Ospreay and that Ricochet match from New Japan, and give or take, that match was about 15 minutes from start to finish by the time they started in the ring, and just say you had that match in its entirety, and let's call it 15, but then you would have added in 5 minutes of pure selling by either guy, or even dare I say 7 or 8 or 9, because of the kind of stuff that they were doing. And some of it might have been a little bit out of sequence, but that was an athletic event. It was an athletic spectacle. But had it the stakes been high, a belt on the line, and I knew more about their characters, and I knew that what they were doing to each other actually inflicted pain, then I would have cared more. I made a comparison that match to 1982, Dynamite versus Tiger Mask. Lots of similarities, a lot of same precision, but what I loved about Dynamite's work in was his intent to inflict pain, his intent to try to harm you. He was working, of course. He laid his shit in, and he was trying to win an athletic contest. And I guess that's my bottom line. An athletic contest where there's logic, and I care about both combatants, whether I love both of them, hate both of them, or love one and hate the other. But those are my basic components that I really want to see to enjoy a match.
Okay, I'm going to throw some crazy stuff at you. If you look at, I'm going to give you three examples. Just the fact that Tenryu, if anybody can remember Tenryu, or Jumbo Tsuruta, were sumo guys. So they had to go through that sumo tradition, and they went through the dojo, and they took that beating, and then they went through the new boy phase, which in Japan, and a new boy, or your young boy, he would be the guy who carry your bag and set up the ring and bow and all that kind of stuff for you and just be basically your valet. But in it with respect, though, it's a different culture. And then all of a sudden go in there. So you got this guy who's put in 15, 16 years of earning that opportunity to go into a fight. So when he locks up and it is that bam and that snatch and you throw him to the ropes and you come off and that bam and no one moves, that's authenticity. People, God, these guys are bringing mountains. Why am I saying that? Marco Antonio Barrero fought Eric Morales 3 times. The second fight, it was like that match with those two kids in Japan with Ricochet and the other young man. They hit each other so hard and so much, and it was a nonstop thing. It was like the Rocky movie. It was like, you guys got to stop. Their wives were screaming. The corners, I was there. I was Marco's bodyguard. They fought, and neither one was going to back. It was that night. We're going to die. We will die in here together. So they hurt themselves. So if you knew their backstory, that type of fight made sense. Their next fight, they didn't hit each other as hard because they already did it. They earned our respect. We know you can go. These young guys in Japan or these house shows are doing all these crazy stuff. They haven't earned it in our eyes yet. So we look at them in a different light. Does any of that, what I just said, make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense, I guess. It's interesting in talking about the Marc Antonio Barrero, Eric Morales fight, because you said they fought 3 times, right? And the second time, it was just banging.
Yeah.
But on the third time, it was because you're talking about shoot boxing.
Yeah.
But then it was because, dude, they weathered that war. So you already gave them that. You know, and also you're going to game plan different. So there comes the logic that I would apply to the pro wrestling sense of we banged for you the second time. We did whatever we did the first time. We banged the second time. Third time, we got to give you something different.
But did you hear what you just said? They banged the second time. These young men didn't have the first time yet.
Right.
Get to that point where we need to go that extreme.
Okay. But nonetheless, going to, let's say, the Will Ospreay Ricochet match, you didn't get a chance to see it, but you heard about it. So we've seen that. So now it's got to be the number three match that you're talking about, where it's like, man, I done took this guy's best shots. He hits like a motherfucker. Now I just keep my distance, see what I can get in on him. And so this is that more tactician match. So my point is, where does the business go now? Like with what everybody's doing, you just got to bring more logic to the business. Because right now, the guys in WWE, the guys in Lucha Underground, and I say this with respect, are doing some fantastic moves. Insane. But at the bottom, at the end of the day, if you don't have the logic there where we saw you do this, like I don't know how those two cats go back to New Japan, go back to that same building, and how they work again. Because what will you do different? Because if I had to go back and I was working, if you were Ospreay and I'm Ricochet, dude, now we're going to go technical wrestling. Because we done gave you everything but the kitchen sink. So now, I mean, maybe that's a bad analogy. But my point is, I'm totally going to fuck you up from a spectator standpoint. Because now we're going to fucking grapple and claw for everything we get. And it's going to be a different match. Because to do anything more to make my point, you're damn going to have to kill yourself.
Yes, or you got to go the other route and not see each other again for 3 years.
Yeah,
but
I get you. But I'm just talking following up.
Yeah.
Where do you go when you've gone this far? My point is, what do you do now where the business is at, just to back off a little bit? To me, when I watch WWE, and with respect to all the talent that they have in there right now, and guys that have way more athletic ability than the generation that I came from, but now more than ever, with all the dynamic move sets, you want to work even harder down at NXT on the character development or the persona or the interview skills. And it's, to me, you should always emphasize the work. I always like the work of, I mentioned Superstar Bill Dundee earlier. He never worked like a guy that was 5'7", 200. Ricky Morton, one of my all-time favorite tag teams with Robert Gibson, Rock and Roll Express. He worked pro style. My point is, it all goes back to logic and why now as they continue to book, to me, you know, wrestling in, it's serious. I think you should have some moments of levity or some comedy. Or a humor, not comedy, some humor. But I think, man, if it's all about competition, you're fighting for a belt or you're fighting to get in contention for a belt. In my opinion, wins and losses matter. And so that in your pursuit of that belt, everything is done in a logical manner to try to continue and manipulate, because you're not fooling the public anymore because they know it's a work, going back to your mystique and romanticism, but you're manipulating them through logical storylines. If your storylines and your work inside the ring doesn't have logic, your storylines and your angles don't mean shit. And if they don't mean shit, you're going to disengage the audience. Does that make sense, or am I just a fucking idiot?
No, you are not, and it makes all the sense in the world. But how do you do that? You got to sell. You don't fucking sell, you don't become authentic. If the people don't feel your pain, then they won't believe in you. You need to be like, there's an actor in Mexico, Pedro Infante. He died in the 40s. He was like the golden era. He was like Justin Bieber of the golden era of cinema in Latin America. He died in a plane crash. The classic thing about Pedro Infante is he would suffer the whole movie, and then at the end he would slowly get the girl and then sing the song and go off into the sunset. You gotta make you gotta make people cry, and then at the end, if there's no other hope, they come out, and if they don't believe it and they don't get that emotional contact with you, they're not going to believe in your work. Lucha Underground, the first season and a half, it was kind of like, what the fuck are we doing? Because this is, we're taking a boulder, we're going to fling it over our shoulder, and let's see what happens when it hits the water. We've done that. Now we've tweaked it. Season three, everything is different. The stories make sense. The selling is there. The authenticity. All those little things that needed to be injected, they are there. You've got to see the athleticism of these kids now. Now that they get it to tell the story, oh my God. Season 3 in Lucha Underground is going to... I don't know what the fuck we're going to do in season 4. I don't know what we're... I don't know what to do.
Okay, you talked about selling real quick, and I was talking about logic, but then I want to talk about...
Isn't it the same thing, though? One goes hand in hand for
yes.
people
well,
who don't
I mean,
know
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I mean, selling would definitely be a part of logic, and logic would be a part of selling.
I mean, you got to... Yeah, even...
Things have to make sense.
Yeah.
Selling is the...
We all know Bruce Lee's a badass. He's going to come and fucking kick your ass. But he's got to go through 40 guys. That's even cooler. Because he finally gets in, he's scarred up and bleeding. Fuck, you know what's on. But if he just walked in fresh, it's like, it's not as cool.
But selling is the recognition and acknowledgement of pain. And it's the body becoming weaker.
Who's that guy that was in WWF? I don't know. I forget his name. I think he was over a little bit. He got so over because he didn't tap out in a match with Brett. You know,
who's
that guy?
Yeah, dude, the old ball guy.
That fucking guy. I think he just sold it probably, and because of that, he's doing all right.
Yeah, you know what? That was an interesting moment you brought up there. Here's the thing, and I'll get back to my point that I was going to make. Ian brought up a real famous match that I was in, WrestleMania 13. Against.
Oh, was that you?
Yes, it was me. I wish it was my twin brother, because now if it was my twin brother, I wouldn't feel like shit. But your point was, I was selling in that match, and I remember going to the finish room, and you know Vince dropped that finish on us, and there was only three men in that room. It was myself, Bret the Hitman Hart, who I got a lot of respect for, and Vince McMahon, who I got a lot of respect for. He laid down the finish, he said, okay, we walked out. I went down and circled the ring, I came back by myself. I said, Vince, you think that finish will really work? And Vince looked at me and goes, oh, goddamn, Steve, I'm telling you it'll work. I said, all right, I'm good. So I went to talk to Brett. We just kind of kicking around a few things. We had a fishbone. I'm holding up my hand in front of Ian. I got my fingers spread wide open, and that's a fishbone. We had this, and this that we knew was going to happen in rest
right on the fly.
But Brett said, Steve, I really think we was in a no-color zone back in the day. You know,
yeah.
No juice. He goes, man, I really think you need to have color if you're going to pass out. And, dude, I don't have been in a company a year and a half. You know, I just got, you know, real hot pretty quick. It took a long time. I had to get rid of my manager and come up with a Stone Cold name. He goes, man, I'm telling you, you need to have color if you're going to pass out. I said, all right, man. He goes, he said he'd do the honors if, you know, I was worried about it because I hadn't been tenured yet, man. I didn't have the stand power, and I didn't know if I could weather the heat. So, anyway, we ended up, Brett helped a brother out. And I got that color, but that was the picture of what you're saying as far as selling. I passed out. That was the thing that made me. But the fact of passing out is the act of losing consciousness, and that is the ultimate price of selling. And the blood painted the visual picture, which will ever be ingrained in people's minds. One of the most iconic pictures in probably WWE history, and probably the only time such a high level double turn has ever been done. I wanted to talk about the two of the other components that I like in a match. And this podcast is all over the place, but we're just shooting the breeze here, and there's no paper or nothing in front of us. We're talking about pro wrestling.
Need more beer.
But one of the things, and I'm going to get one right after this point, is fire. Fire. Because I'm sitting across from Ian. I don't know if you ever met Ian before. Scary looking dude, bald head, got tattoos everywhere, pretty jacked up. A dude knows some iron, teaches Krav Maga. So, Ian, if we used to stand up, and we're standing here in my house, and I just start slapping the shit out of you. About every 15 seconds, I just fire off and just knock the shit out of you. There's only so many of those you're going to take after you say, you know what? Fuck this motherfucker, and all of a sudden you're just going to go haywire and try to stomp a mud hole in my ass and walk it dry because I have angered you to a point where I've insulted you as a man, your guest in my house, and now I'm teeing off on you, and you're going to fire back. So when you fire back, I would imagine you're going to fire back with extreme vengeance and trying to inflict as much pain in me as you can because I've pissed you off. I've fucked you over and I've disrespected you, much like a heel getting heat on a baby face. Finally, he's been breaking all the rules. He's pulling his hair. He's pulling his fucking tights. He's doing everything he can to keep his baby face down, but that baby face is fighting for everything he can. He's playing within the structures of the rules. Why? Because he's a baby face. But finally, after calling a couple of hope spots, you know, it's time to make that comeback. And when it's time for that comeback, I'll guarantee you, you're not going to hit me three times with a running clothesline here in my office. You're going to beat the fuck out of me with your balled up fist, use some Krav Maga, or kick the fuck out of me. My point is, it's going to elicit an emotion out of you, which is, it's fight or flight. I doubt very seriously in that you're going to run through my sliding doors and run down the fucking block hollering. I would imagine that when you open up on me, you're going to bring everything you got because it's time to end this bullshit. Am I correct?
Yeah. And
you know, yes, the point I'm trying to make.
I do. I'm kind of a bitch, so I'd probably just take and start to cry and say sorry that I offended you. Yeah. So I wouldn't fight back.
Come on, go with work with me on this. But I'm trying to make a point about fire.
Well, fire. Look at the NHL. You fucking, we're setting up for a face-off, and you look at me, that's it, we're going.
Right.
So you punch a guy 3, 4, 5 times, of course he's going to fire back. It doesn't take that much, right? You ain't going to stand
there
too long.
Yeah, but you ain't going to fire up. You got to fire up.
You
got to
go.
That's one thing that it is, to me, is a lost art in the business or a lost emotion. Because you're talking about selling. We're talking about logic. It won't be logic. Let me turn the tables. Fuck, you come over here and you slap the fuck out of me a couple times after I said, hey, Ian, why don't you come over to my crib? We'll do a podcast. I'll tell you right now, you ain't going to get too many of those motherfuckers because we're going. And goddamn, whether I beat your ass or you beat mine, we're going. That's the point I'm trying to make. That's logic in a match.
Yeah, that's real life.
Dude, if
it's a fight.
If you want to do something here, you're going to pay for it. Well, if you do something in my ring, I'm the baby face. All of a sudden, I got a gut full of your antics. I got to come back on your ass. And so when I'm talking about engaging the audience,
you haven't got a promo in a while, have you?
Dude, I'm talking about it. I mean, if you want to grab an audience by the guts, like Tom Cruise in Mission Impossible or any of your favorite action stars, whoever the fuck it might be, when it's payback time, it's payback time.
Yeah.
And so when you're talking about selling, we're talking about logic, we're talking about doing all these things in a match for it to be believable, to work on the character development so that, you know, I either love this person or I hate that person, or whatever the case is, I bought into their characters, and fire is so simple, but you see it these days so manufactured, that it's see-through, and it's the same old three clothesline bullshit comeback, and I can call the comeback because I've seen it a million times, but you know the worst part of it? I don't feel it because there's no anger there. And if a person has fucking held me down by cheating or if it's just my time to get my shit back in, I'm pissed off and I'm coming for your ass. And you've got to send that message out as a babyface or reverse it, a mean streak as a heel. If you're a fucking dastardly piece of shit, cowardly, whatever, or just a bully, when it comes time to get heat on that babyface, if you ain't stomping his guts in with malice and intent to hurt, you're doing your job wrong. You ain't got to go about doing it in a rapid fire fashion. You can pace yourself. I'm not saying rush, which is another mistake that you often see today.
It's the biggest
people
mistake.
Are rushing so much shit today because they think, we're not getting anything out of the crowd because we're not doing things fast enough. No, you're doing things too goddamn fast. Slow the fuck down. I take you back to a match that one of the best matches I've seen in a long time was you and fucking Pentagon Jr. Was it season one?
Season one.
Dude, the way y'all laid that out, you ain't been in a ring in fucking how long?
About 8 years.
Yeah, and I'm sitting there thinking, all right, how's Vamp going to pull this off? Dude, you sold. You generated offense, then he got back on top, and you had the size advantage, the clear size advantage, but he operated and worked on you in a fashion that was logical and sensible. I bought into it, hook, line, and sinker. I ain't just saying that because you're right here. I talked about it last year on the podcast.
Yeah. You did, and it makes more. First of all, for the fans, it's been a long time since anybody's seen Steve Austin cut a promo, and I'm right here front row. You're all fired up, veins coming out of your neck, rolling your sleeves up on your biceps. You're fucking ready to go. I'm backing off. Hey, man, I'm your homie, brother. But I think the biggest thing that the kids are making, kids, when I say kids, the younger people are making, boys and girls, men and women, are you're going too fast. You're too quick. You punch a guy 6 times, and before the fans can even say that digest that violence. You've already kicked him, spun kicked, and you did a moonsault. You've kicked out. You don't sell the chair shots, and you're back. Everything you just did, junk food, man. Fucking in and one. It just, you just wasted all that talent. You didn't tell a fucking story. And I think that's the point.
Telling stories. I'm going to tell you a story right now about two dudes. One of them's bald. The other guy's, he got the
I'm bald.
Number two gimmick on.
That's number one. It's a zero. This is growing up.
Zero.
Yeah.
So you got these two thirsty guys. They're angry. They're sitting across the table.
Goddamn, brother. I got to calm you down. Come over here and kick me and stomp me in the corner.
I'm just trying to make a point,
give me a cutter. Jesus Christ.
I was trying to make a goddamn point.
Fuck, I'm scared.
I ain't
everybody
call my wife or myself. I'll get my blood pressure medication in here.
Holy shit. You're fucking, yo, Jack, what's wrong with you?
No, but you know what? But yeah, doesn't, I mean, like when you talk about the business, you get excited about it. It's like I get so fired up about the business because that's my love for it. And so I just get ramped up. So I didn't mean to go fucking crazy.
I think it was fucking awesome.
If I had a tachometer, I was probably like at the 7,500 RPMs. I almost redlined a couple times.
No, you redlined like a motherfucker. I was watching you.
Well, since I redlined, we're going to take a pause for the calls. Sponsors coming here and do your thing. I'm taking a break to have a beer with N. Hodgkinson Vampiro here at the Steve Austin Show. Coming right back in a minute. Hey, you looking to buy a used car? Then you should check out TrueCar.com and the TrueCar app. I bet you didn't know that you can use TrueCar to help you buy a used car, too. It ain't just for new car purchases. There's over 500,000 pre-owned vehicles available from TrueCar certified dealers nationwide. And there are over 11,000 TrueCar certified dealers. And TrueCar lets you get upfront pricing information on new and used vehicles and lets you see what other people pay for the car you want so that you feel confident you're getting a fair price. With TrueCar, via their TrueCar pricing curve, you see what other people paid for the car and you lock in your guaranteed savings. Then you can connect with a local certified dealer of your choosing, take them your TrueCar guaranteed savings certificate, and make your car buying experience quick and easy. Over 2 million cars have been sold to TrueCar users by the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network, and TrueCar users save an average of over $3,000 off MSRP. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit TrueCar.com or download the TrueCar app to enjoy a better car buying experience. Some features not available in all states. I took a serious break here in the action, man. I got all calmed down, regained my composure as the great
Gordon Solie.
Gordon Solie. That's
how about that? Who could pull a name out like that, huh? Trivia, baby. Come on.
Hey, well, let's talk about your announcement for Lucha Underground. Dude, were you influenced by anybody's style?
Yeah, of course. Great Muda was probably the guy I tried to copy the most.
No, but from an announcing standpoint.
Oh, from an announcing standpoint? No. I got a friend, Kevin Gill. He does some indie shows and stuff like that, and he's got a podcast. And I've kind of stole things from him, probably. I kind of approached it like this. I thought, I have no experience. I have no clue. The best thing about me is being animated, like you just right now. You're fired up. I think I've made a career out of being charismatic. Why study and go into business with somebody who does that for a living? Just go there and be a filler. Looking at your picture of Stevie Ray Vaughan, I remember Jimmy Vaughan telling his brother, how are you going to play lead guitar and sing at the same time? You're not going to do it. I've always based everything I've done in my life around music. And Stevie would say, I will play the guitar, but then I will play the guitar. So I look at my relationship at the announce booth as one guitar player. Somebody will play, but when there needs to be a little fill, I will do that little fill. I thought that that was the best way to approach it, and it seems to be working.
Dude,
make sense?
You're old enough to know who Stevie Ray Vaughan is. I got a big fan base in the UK and all the way hell across the different countries. And a lot of people here in the States are too young to understand who Stevie Ray Vaughan was.
Okay.
To me, he's the greatest blues guitarist player ever. In my opinion, he's my favorite guitarist of all time, ever. And I know some pretty badass guitar players. Did you ever get a chance to watch what this guy did?
Yeah, of course. And you know, he used to play at the Alma Combo in Toronto.
Exactly. There's a famous recording of that very
concert.
Yeah,
yeah. And I was at a show. I was working for MTV, and there was a big festival going on, and the Stray Cats played, and Stevie Ray played, and I saw that in Minneapolis. I saw him a few other times, too, but yeah, I've seen him. Sure. Good stuff, dude.
Absolutely. The best stuff.
Yeah, but he opened for the Stray Cats. How about that?
Well, that's interesting. That's back when he's paying his dues, back in the dojo getting days.
Yeah, he was about to break. He was breaking, but the Stray Cats were the Stray Cats.
Right.
But to see Brian Setzer and Stevie Ray together, come on, man. Maybe it's a little bit, if they're friends of the UK, of course. I mean, the Stray Cats started in the UK, right? They left New York, went to there.
God dang. Yeah, man, none of my fans know who the Stray Cats are. Man, the Stray Cats had a good run. But, I mean, that's because we're two old dudes. I want to go back to Lucha Underground because at the beginning of season two, y'all shot, and I sent you a text message as soon as I saw this thing. It was open of the season. You were in an insane asylum. What would you call it? An insane asylum.
Yeah, I was in an insane asylum.
A center?
Yeah, I was in the insane asylum.
Yeah, okay. Mental facility.
Yeah.
So, anyway, you're at the end of the table, and the dude's talking to you and, you know, in. Asking you all these questions, are you still having these visions?
Yeah.
No, and you're having these flashbacks, and so you lied to him because you are having the visions, and you're not thinking about, you know, doing these bad things to people. And there's a flashback like you really attacked the guy. So the dude slides you some pills across the table to take two a day, and it's always take two a day. But since you're a wrestler, you got to take, you know, whatever.
Yeah, two.
So you got to maintain your sanity.
87 must be better.
My point is, after all this time in the asylum, he lets you out.
Yes.
And then there's Matt Stryker there to pick y'all up in a badass, what was it, Cadillac or was it a Lincoln?
I think it was a Lincoln.
Yeah, anyways, badass black car.
Yeah.
And so I sent you a text message. That vignette was so epic, I thought that you had got your own action-adventure series. I said, dude, did you get a series? And you're like, what the fuck are you talking about? I said, no, the thing on the TV. So I thought you actually had a fucking series for going. That's how well that thing was shot. How long did that take, and what did you think when they broke it down to you?
It took about 2 hours. It's pretty quick.
That's very quick.
Yeah, we kind of, they were like, I just said, fuck, guys. You know, they broke it down to me, and we were going over it, and the gentleman who played the doctor, Anthony Jensen, he guided me. He said, listen, he's an actor, and he's also an upper echelon in Lucha Underground. He's one of the main bosses.
Oh. But,
and all the vignettes, we have office people in cameos. So we did this thing, and he, you know, he was on the Outsiders way, you know, he's the real deal. So he said, just follow me, and I thought to myself, you know, the director said, think of it as a song, you know, boom, 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 boom. And I was like, I got this motherfucker. So basically what you're going to do is tell me I got problems, and I'm going to tell you I don't, and I'm going to fucking go off. Are you sure? I said, yes. Okay, so you two motherfuckers are going to kind of run in here, right? And they were like, they had this guy doing all this, and I was like, no. I said, looking. Don't ask me why I know, but I'm going to tell you how this goes. And he came in. I was like, I'm going to fucking bang, boom, bing, boom, boom. And that's it, man. Fuck, do the gimmick and I'm out. And they were like, you sure? And I was like, look, motherfucker, when you come and grab me, whatever I'm doing, don't get freaked out. Because it's going to go down. And they're like, what are you talking about? And I was like, relax. He came in, gang, boom, bam. We did it in like three takes. Yeah, it was quick.
So what did they think? Because these guys, were they stunt guys?
Yeah, the one guy, you know, Hollywood.
Right.
God bless them. Love them to death, yeah. Right? But, you know, guys are trying to make it. They got that. One day they're a tough guy. One day they're male model. Whatever they get called on to do, people are trying to make it in this world. So they came in with all the right intentions and we're martial artists. And I was like, yeah. And I fucking pulled up my Jägermeister, slammed down a couple shots, grabbed a couple Vicodins, and I was like, all right, who's the martial artist? And they were like, what are you doing? Come here, you fucking. So what are you going to do? You're going to grab me by the neck? You know, they're kind of stiff because they see you're a wrestler.
What did you tell them? You had like a Krav Maga background?
No, I was just, you know, I was being cool, and they were like, we're fans, and, you know, we work out at Gold's Gym, and I was like, okay. And I was like, well, how are you going to grab me? And I said, that's it? That's your big deal? And they were like, what the fuck is going on? You know, I'm freaking him out. Yeah. Fucking with him. So he came in and just, you know, popped him. We knocked the wall down on the first shot. Took an elbow. I said, fuck, it's a good thing wrestling's fake, right? Everybody was like, let's just get this fucking guy out of here. And, yeah. So it was fun. It was fun. But it was quick.
Okay, that being said, man, you spent some time out here doing your voiceovers and stuff. You ever thought about delving into any acting or anything like that?
I've done some movies. Bullshit stuff. I had a paranormal.
Do you find the process enjoyable? And what I just mean, hey, man, making a dime. I mean, the process of, because I'm watching you and you're doing these martial arts things. You're cracking your knuckles. You're getting into this character because, okay, and boom, 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 you're equating the rock and roll song to it and you're ramping yourself up. So did you enjoy the process? You obviously did for Lucha Underground, but in your other gigs, were you able to get into a character?
See, I've tried to... Hey, man, I mean, did you ever try to separate yourself from Stone Cold? You can't.
No, turn the volume up.
Turn the volume up. It's take the earplugs out. Just put your head in the amp. I came from a musical background, so shit. I like it. My biggest acting thrill was when I had a paranormal TV show in Mexico, and I got to do these weird, weird things because there's no limits in Mexico. So voodoo ceremonies and all these crazy ass things that you can't put on TV up here. We did some deep shit, and I loved that acting. Yeah, I mean, I really really like it so much. We did a movie in Mexico. It was really bad. And
don't be so hard on yourself. Steve, well, why was this movie so bad? I've done a bunch of bad movies. No, no. Why was this movie bad?
Steve, it was bad. Yeah, it was just fucking bad, man. But it was an experience, right? But
that's the thing.
I love the creative process better. I like producing better. But I think I have some acting in me. I'm going to give it a try.
So what do you like about the producing part then?
Because you're so compassionate, like you just went off and cut that 85-minute promo, and I thought you were going to fucking stun me on the table and hit me with
your
clock.
I had to get 2 episodes out of it.
I had to put the clocks on the floor because I thought you were going to slam me and move your dog over. I thought, oh, fuck, here we go. Never happened in New York, baby. It's Steve's house. Because you get so compassionate when you get a young man who's got that wide-eyed dream and he's still innocent and he's not corrupted by this business, and you can tweak it and you can give him something, and they come back and they say, I learned so much from you. That's everything.
You got any more crazy dreams? I mean, what's next as far as a goal you'd like to do?
Well, and I've said it to you off the mic. I'm going to say it to your face on the mic. You know, there's a few things in my life and my career that have put me over the top. The Sting match was something that was really famous. Being the first guy of the new generation to work Ric Flair, going to Japan, being with Muda, being a Canadian, going to Mexico, getting over all that. There are certain things that people have carried me and put me on top. Your podcast got me more publicity in that hour and a half or 2 hours or whatever it was than I had in 5 years of WCW. You inspire me. You motivate me. Why? Because you left the business intact. You suffered in WCW. A lot of people don't know that you suffered in WCW and you paid your dues and they told you weren't going to make it and they didn't have plans for you. And you know how it is. Man, I'm your fan, dude. I watched all your shit. And to see, to hear the kids talk about your podcast, how passionate you are, and then see a Steve Austin fucking promo right in front of me, drinking your beer in your house. Holy shit. Do I have any wild dreams? Dog, I'm telling you, the work that you do for guys like me and the people who listen to your shit, I told you I want to do a podcast because of you. I don't got no fucking desire to sit there and type and read and study and talk to people and answer. Fuck that, man. I did my time in wrestling. You make me believe again, man.
What would the podcast be about?
Fuck, I don't know. Just going to get a bunch of Steve Austin beer and look at the clock and see what happens.
I can get a beer place to sponsor you. I got that covered.
Call it in the ring.
Probably about a million cats out there fixing to get started a podcast. I can call it in the ring.
No, go fuck yourselves, all you guys. Don't steal that shit. Call it in the ring, bro. What's it going to be about?
Call it in the ring with Vampiro. And the ring could be anything. The ring could be the world. I mean, if you didn't want to talk about wrestling, you could talk about pop culture. You could talk about
anything,
a movie.
Man.
You could talk about, you could talk about your paranormal.
Where are you from?
Born in Austin, grew up in Victoria and Edna, and then moved out to San Antonio, and then out here in L.A.
I was born in Thunder Bay, Ontario. What do you and I have? And what the fuck told me 30, 40 years ago that I would be sitting here with you? It's that brotherhood, man. It's that love. It's that thing that this business has done to us, man. We ain't never going out. We're doing life, man. And we're living life.
Okay, you said you'd like to have another match.
Yeah. I thought I was going to have it about half an hour ago when you're all pumped up, veins coming out, fists were squeezing that microphone and some of them knuckles turning white. I was like, God damn, I'm going to tap out even before he stands up, but hell yeah.
See, that was like, if WrestleMania 33 was tomorrow, that could be the match. But anyway, let me just...
Do I want to do another match?
I'm going to retract that because I'm not selling anything as far as me and a WrestleMania. Not anything. Stacy, leave that in. But I was just making a point. Yeah, I got caught up in the moment. But yeah, I mean, so in a match in Lucha Underground, who would your opponent be?
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
You just want to do it again?
You know what? I'd like to just because he's my friend and I respect him so much. I just want to... But I wouldn't do it because I would embarrass him. He's too good. Johnny Mundo. I'd like to be in the ring with him just because he's so fucking good. But I wouldn't do it because I would look bad. He's just on another level. PJ Black, I'd like to work him just because we're old school guys and it would just be a good vibe, man. I'd love to do a job for a new up and comer. I'd like another program and give somebody the launching board they need to go. I'd do it with anybody, man.
But then again, when you said doing a job, I understand where your heart is. But then if you think about the business, what if you did two matches? And that's me being selfish. And so then you go over the first time and then go under or do the favors for on the way out. Because you don't want to go into the program now just saying, hey, paying the price or doing the favors just to get this guy over. Come in there and get something for yourself and then return it.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, if I did that, it would be two matches.
I know, that's what I'm saying.
I did it the other way.
Yeah.
And I got four seasons out of it.
Dude, that deal with Pentagon Jr., that was off the charts. But dude,
I'm going to do something this year.
I think Mundo, dude, I don't know, not too good. He's awesome. But I think you guys have great chemistry together.
Well, here's what I mean. He's so phenomenal right now. He's at his best where he is as a young man. He's at the right age. He's at his peak. I don't want to waste his time. He doesn't need me. I'm too respectful.
Dude, he'd be into a big time match. That's a big time match.
Well, yeah.
Okay, name me a bigger name than you. If you stand in, it's not blowing smoke up your ass, but looking at what you've created, looking at how people perceive you, you stepping back, dude, you know it's going to be a special match, so it has to be a special person. You're a made guy. So when you say that, yeah, he's at the top of his game, well, you were at the top of your game as far as your in-ring stuff, much like me many years ago, but as far as perception and being over, dude, you bust out the wrestling gear and boom, you're at the top of the food chain.
Yeah, I understand that. I think it would be more interesting to be a partner with somebody and let them get the rub and then turn on you, do an angle and make it a long-term deal. Give some credibility. Let that kid get his authenticity by being in with older established made guy. I don't know, man. I would rather get a mid-sized car and a bunch of junk food and just drive around to a bunch of indie shows and just show up and say, hey, man, who needs to work tonight? That, to me, would be a cool thing to do right now. To have that one more big match, the whole look at me, shit. I don't need it, dude. I don't really need it. The last weekend, two weekends of taping, all the younger guys have come up to me and said, you're like a big brother and thank you. And I've learned so much. That, fuck, I don't need another match, man. That was my match. You know what I mean? I don't know. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense to me.
I mean, you can give me a stunner right here, right now, and I'd be pretty fucking happy with that. Dude. I see you looking at it. I see you tighten up that fist.
If I wasn't 10 weeks, if I wasn't 10 weeks out of rotator cuff surgery and another beer, I might do it. But I'm gonna take my time.
What would happen right now? We took a small fucking iPhone and we went to the pharmacy down there and we just got into it. Steve Austin, Vampiro. Just like you did with Booker. Same thing.
Oh, God.
People wouldn't even know what to do. If we went to a Latino community right now.
Well, first of all, we rented out that store, so we had carte blanche.
I'm kidding, man. I like the wrestler. One of the boys is coming out on you tonight. You cut a promo, and you're already thinking about doing a high spot.
Oh, dude, I mean, you're talking about the business. It's got to be real.
Fuck,
we'd be arrested so damn quick, it'd make your head spin.
Yeah, but hey,
with
man.
All the other calamity going on in the United States of America, it's just all of a sudden we're trying to shoot an angle, we both get arrested.
Yeah, but out of that angle, I'd probably get a movie, so I'd take the bump.
It's not a bad idea.
Man, don't even think about it.
There's a Walgreens down the road. All right, I'm cutting that idea off.
That's funny, dude, man.
So you're here now. You're at the crib. You're back to Thunder Bay tomorrow. What's up?
No, man. I'm here all week. I'm doing my pre-exam for Krav Maga, my black belt. It's a big deal. I'm sure people aren't really fans of martial arts, but to get your black belt in Krav Maga from a school that's sanctioned by the Wingate University, which is the IDF training center in Israel, it is a big deal, especially being a foreigner, right? So, yeah, I'm at that level, and it's been a lifelong journey. It's 25 years in the making, and I'm going for it, yeah. So I'm studying here all week, go back to Thunder Bay, and I got a school full of students, and I'm going to take on there's a new project developing. I'm starting all that. So, yeah, that's it, man, basically.
Dude, what's the deal with the Krav Maga stuff? What's it akin to? I mean, it's basically the Israeli military fighting system. Is that a bad way to describe it? I mean,
no, it's not. You got to remember, Israel, when it was made a state, it's surrounded by, in their terminology, enemies. Are they constantly under attack? So, every single person in Israel needs to do time in the military. Every single person, doesn't matter of your age, your gender or your physical ability, needs to learn the fighting system. So if the country needs to go to war, they will. And it's a pretty extreme thing because it's made to do bad things. It's not a martial art. It's really made to do bad things. It's been toned down for the public. I'm certified to teach military. I ran the SWAT unit in Mexico for a while in the city that I was living in. I do a lot of police stuff and the civilian, and now I have a huge kids program. It's just one of those things that came natural to me. I get it. I see it. I'm very good at it. I love it. And I'm pretty much dedicated to that. That's my life goal, is to become a great Krav Maga instructor.
All right, so, dude, you're flying on your airplane. Somebody gets up drunk and disorderly. You sit there with your seatbelt on and wait for the flight attendants to take care of this person, or because you're in a tube with wings on it and they're putting your safety in peril, would you engage this person?
I give a card to the steward or stewardess, and on the card says, if you need help, the signal is this, and it's either a movement or an eye thing or a word, because I know for a fact, being a wrestler, I got a great job. If I go, it's going. And I don't know if I really want to go to jail for that. So it's got to be for real. And most times it's not. They're just drunk and stupidness. But I do let the pilot know and the stewardess know, or the steward, that if it does go down, that this is what's going on.
See, that's cool, though. I dig that. But that takes me back, because I'm in my wrestler mindset, talking about that comeback. Talking about that comeback with fire. You just said, if you, and it's not a comeback, but it's acting in the same. It's fire. And, dude, you ain't going to half-ass it.
Can't.
Because I would imagine in Krav Maga, you've been trained, the physical things that you know, the holds, the techniques, on all the technical stuff that I can't even speak of, you know that you never underestimate anybody.
Yeah, Krav Maga is made to do what it is made to do. Krav Maga was made to stop people and make them not move again. So there in Krav Maga, there is no, I'm going to twist your arm a little more. It's you're going down.
Right.
Yeah, so there is, you go. Our mindset is it's 150. It's not 10%, 20%. It's go and finish.
All right, let's shut down. I got time for one more beer. I've enjoyed talking to you.
I hope so. We've just been all.
Boy, I guarantee you, I damn near was going to beat your ass a while ago, or get my ass beat in the process. No, we damn near had match of the century.
Dana
White, Vince McMahon. Damn phones on the damn board was lighting up because they could hear this promo through this screen right here.
I'm down. Do the Hulk Hogan, Jeff Jarrett, just step on my chest.
I was going to Pentagon Jr. reverse it and take the L.
Fuck, brother.
I was going to tell you, hit me in the head with this Pearl beer and neon clocking. I'm always talking about.
By the time both of you and I got our broken old asses up to do that, it would have been time to go to bed.
Hey man, good talking to you.
Good talking to you too, brother.
All right, everybody, give me the go home cue. It's time to wrap up his podcast and ride off in the sunset. But before I do, I want to thank N. Hodgkinson, Vampiro of Lucha Underground on the El Rey Network. Ultima Lucha 2 is happening right now all the way through the 20th. Hey, folks, it was good to talk to Vampiro live and in living color. And the match I'm going to recommend you guys watch today is one that I've recommended before, but to my new listeners who might not have seen that match, this is from season one, I guess, of Lucha Underground, and it's Ultima Lucha, Vampiro versus Pentagon Jr., the Cerro Miedo match. And it's the full match. If you go to YouTube and type that in, you'll see Vampiro, my guest today in Hodgkinson, make a return to the ring from I don't know how many years and take on one of the guys, a hell of a damn worker in Pentagon Jr. And I consider the Pentagon Jr. to be probably one of the best gimmicks going in pro wrestling right now. And Vampiro comes dressed up. I don't know if it's like a priest and he's got this gimmick with smoke coming out of it. It's just a badass presentation, man. A highly entertaining match. They use logic in this match because of where Ian was coming from. Hadn't wrestled in a long time. Of course, Pentagon Jr. has been working his ass off. They sell like a motherfucker. Lots of logic in this match, and it's just an instant classic. Vampiro and Pentagon Jr. from Ultima Lucha 2. So anyway, it's a Sierra Miedo, whatever you call it, match. God damn it. That chick's doing all the announcing. She does a good job, that young lady. She does a good job announcing the guys. I like her style. Hey, folks. Couple of plugs real quick. All the t-shirts from Broken Skull Ranch, they're on BrokenSkullRanch.com. My Broken Skull IPA, if you want it delivered to your house and your state allows it to be delivered, you can find a link for it at BrokenSkullRanch.com. If you in L.A., go by 140 Main Street here in El Segundo, California, and tell them Austin sent you and stop by the brewery and have a cold one. Hey, if you want a Steve Austin Broken Skull knife from Cold Steel, go to BrokenSkullRanch.com. Anything Steve Austin, you can find at my website. Hey, I appreciate you guys supporting the sponsor of the Steve Austin Podcast. They're the ones that let me do this for you free twice a week. So big thanks to DDPYoga.com. Go to DDPYoga.com/Austin to get 20% off anything you purchase for a limited time, including the new collector's edition of the Resurrection of Jake the Snake documentary. Thanks to TrueCar. And, of course, big shout-out to Amazon. They've been supporting this podcast since day one. Use my Amazon links whenever you're doing any online shop, and an Amazon will kick back a couple of bucks to the podcast. Don't cost you nothing extra. Ain't no hidden fees or charges. You can buy whatever you plan on buying and help out the podcast in the process. We got bills to pay, and that's how we pay our production cost. You can find my Amazon links by going to podcast1.com. clicking on the Killer Deals button on the top right corner of the page, and then hitting the Steve Austin Show button. I got Amazon links for USA, UK, and Canada. If you bookmark it, you can find it in one click. Hey, folks, I want to say thank you very much for all the emails I got concerning our lab, Shona. We sure miss her, but we're getting by. I appreciate all the emails. Y'all keep listening. The 60-second AP news headlines are coming up next. Until next time, my name is Steve Austin, and I will catch your ass down the road.
Download new episodes of Steve Austin Unleashed every Thursday at podcast1.com. That's podcastone.com.